Thanks for coming. It's early. If you're in the public health nursing section, though, you've been up since 6:30 at the business meeting, so it's almost late at this point. We appreciate you being here. It's nice to have a small group. One of the nice things about it is that you know, we all sort of start on the same page. But if you have any questions or totally disagree, you know, I don't mind doing that right in the middle of the presentation with such a small group. I wanted to talk a little bit today. First of all, I have no relationships to disclose. I am an assistant professor at Duquesne University. I've been working with a team looking at women as they're coming out of jail or prison, sort of transition and community corrections and the issues around women as they leave incarceration. This work has all been funded by the Rob Wood Johnson Foundation, the Nurse Faculty Scholars Program, and just like I'm sure all of you, I just have to start a presentation by thanking the people who are willing to share their stories and when we talk about advancing the work in this area. Incredibly generous women who are giving of their time and want to see these healthcare improvements for themselves and their peers. One of the fantastic things about talking to public health professionals is I don't have to spend a lot of time talking about how complex this population is and how these interwoven ideas about poverty and violence and trauma and survival kind of come together for health outcomes. Sometimes what we do have to remember is that, so in the last 3 years, as I've been doing this grant, I've probably talked to 300 women. I'm in the jail every week in another capacity, women who are incarcerated or recently released. Oh, sure, and I can just step closer. So one of the things you have to remember, one of the things that I keep reminding myself is that in addition to the unbelievable complexities that cannot be understated in the lives of the women, a lot of their goals are just like mine and every woman I interact with. So most of them would like to lose 15 pounds. They would like to exercise more. They are very interested in how the contaminants they're exposed to are affecting their lives, the exact same concerns. They are consumed with, as I am and all the women that I know, work-life balance and what that looks like. Their work-life balance is different, but they're always thinking about how the choices they make in securing and maintaining employment relate to their families and the other things they have going on. Their balance demands are much different in many ways and have to do with the criminal justice system. But again, these ideas, and I have to remind myself that, you know, the goals are very, very similar without failing to recognize the complexities. A couple of just sort of general ideas about incarceration. So for 20 years, we've been talking about the rising rates of incarceration, especially among women. New statistics are starting to show us that that's leveling off to some degree and decreasing in certain areas for lots of different populations, which is very good news. As my friend Lori eloquently puts it, what we have, however, is maintenance at an artificially high rate of incarceration. So we have to be quite aware that while it's not headed in the rising direction, frankly, because we don't have the capacity, I mean, they just don't have any place to put people, we have these very artificially high rates of incarceration, especially when it comes to women. Some general ideas about health risk. Again, this is an easy sell to this particular group, but women who have a history of incarceration have poorer mental and physical health than both women in the general population and men on the inside. So this is an extremely vulnerable group in comparison in every way. They go into jail with incredibly complicated histories, more likely to have infectious disease and everything else. Prisoners in general are much more likely to die upon release than in the first years after release than the general population, supporting the idea that, again, we're talking about incredibly complex people and the identification of a population that is at risk for the most serious morbidity and mortality. What I want to talk about today is part of a larger study that we did, which is called the WITH study, which was a randomized trial looking at engagement and if interaction in a case management, intensive case management program with a nurse could increase engagement with women as they're released. It was, we wanted to start doing something right away, but it was really a feasibility study because the concern is that they were just not going to be interested. I cannot think about my health right now. I have to think about these other things. I have to focus on getting a job. I have to talk to my probation officer. I got to get reconnected with my kids. So the idea was, could we keep them engaged in talking about their health over a sustained period of time? And that's different results, but the answer is yes, which was fantastic. And again, goes back to my original comment, which was they're very interested in their health. We all are in the maintenance of our lives. Clearly, the women I spoke to understand the connection between their health and the other issues in their life and can talk about it in a rather sophisticated way. This is one of the descriptive aims of the study, which is just looking at the baseline, what engagement in healthcare utilization is like for women as they're leaving jail. This is our theoretical framework where we sort of looked at stressors. And as you see at the bottom, so we're talking about chronic disease management. I'm looking at women who have a chronic mental or physical condition. Over time, what I'm looking at in terms of the effects of stress and appraisal and coping on things like engagement in care, psychological well-being, depression, anxiety, those particular issues. One of the key outcomes of the study and what I want to talk about today is patient engagement, which is something everyone's talking about. It's also called patient activation. For some of us, it looks a little bit like self-efficacy as well, right? So these are the ideas about where you fall in terms of taking care of managing your own health, starting to take a role, growing into building knowledge and confidence, taking action, and maintaining behaviors. Over time, and this allows for a continuous sort of number measurement of engagement, but also a level where people are. It's used both clinically and in research to kind of assess where people are in terms of moving forward in their engagement and activation. And again, my clinical work and the research with women in this population shows that we need to focus on getting them engaged because of their very real needs, try to getting them connected and recognizing sort of how those things all play together in managing their health. So what we want to know is how engaged are women in their healthcare as they transition out, and then what's the relationship between utilization and patient engagement in this population? So if they are highly engaged, how does that affect how they use healthcare resources as they leave? We had 72 women in the baseline data. The ones in red are what we're talking about in this study. The other ones are the data that we collected over time in the intervention study. So we're looking at patient engagement as measured by the patient activation measure, which is the most widely used tool in this area. It's called the PAM. Again, I'll show you a couple of questions that will look familiar to self-efficacy people. It shares some characteristics in that way. We also used a quality of life measure as a major outcome looking at engagement and utilization in this population. There's a lot of data, as you can tell, in this study, and we're trying to kind of figure out what's happening with women at this time of transition. A couple of examples of what activation asks about. So when all is said and done, I'm the person who's responsible for managing my health condition, and that's a Likert scale. And then the score comes up to where you are. I know the different options. I know how to prevent further problems. Other questions about confidence in maintaining those decisions in times of stress, which of course transition is. So those are the kinds of things we're looking at in the activation measure. So what did we find? Here's some demographics. This is done in the Pittsburgh area, and so this represents sort of the demographic breakdown. It's a little bit older group, and at 37 than the incarcerated population in general, but what we're looking at here is women who are living in transitional housing facilities on their as they leave. So these are people who are getting additional community corrections services, so they likely have previous incarcerations, have a longer history, are dealing with more longer-term incarceration history. We have a very high educational level, interestingly, in the region, with an average of 12.1 years of formal education, which is very high compared to the rest of the country in an interesting way. We have a very regional differences in that area. The literacy rates in our jail are incredibly high, and some people are trying to work out why that is. Of the 72, only 11 were currently working, and the remaining 62 had absolutely no income at all. We included that, it seems obvious, but the thought was that some people were getting income in other ways, and there just weren't. Most women had children and had an average of two. Oh, and the number of incarcerations is almost eight, which is an incredibly hard number to get to, and frankly, it's just not at all accurate because people define that different ways, how many times they've been back, those kinds of things. This is a summary of their health history, physical health problems. Again, you had to have a chronic mental or physical health problem. The reality is that most women had both. We had absolutely no trouble recruiting. And in these community corrections facilities, women with the most needs, most likely, and other research we've done in the area, over 90% have both a physical and a mental health condition. Number of people who reported frequent distress in quality of life was 55 out of 72. Most had health insurance, which again is a regional thing. We had a concerted effort through Second Chance to get people insurance as they're coming out, and that's highly reflected in the access there. Not surprisingly, most have a substance abuse history, and over half report having a current PCP. These are utilizations since release, so this is ER visit, urgent care, you'll see here. So the top half up through dentist is more the physical health issues, the bottom half is mental health. And this reflects sort of what we see in the literature, which is they're much more likely to be engaged in mental health because of things like mental health court, drug and alcohol treatment, issues like that. But the first one tells us, of course, when they are getting care, a lot of them are going to the emergency room. But 30% third of them are seeking routine care. And again, in Pittsburgh, where this area is, and most people are not from Pittsburgh directly who are in transitional housing there, that we have tons of resources for health care. That is not the problem. We have a very large medical center. We have the access or the availability of care is not the issue. The access issues around going, engaging, finding a home, finding a place you feel like they can listen to, those are the issues that we're dealing with. These are the engagement levels, and you can see that women report being, the majority of women report being in the higher level of engagement, and which we'll talk about in terms of the discussion a little bit. So the next slide is supposed to be about how this engagement level is really associated with all the utilization, right? So that if you have a high level engagement, you are supposed to be going to the doctor more, you're supposed to be finding a fantastic nurse practitioner, making a connection, those kinds of things about maintaining behavior. So that was, of course, what I was totally going to find. And it turns out that the only thing related to engagement in terms of utilization with this particular population is one-on-one counseling, which may have something to do with the complex needs and somebody really doing that. But again, the relationship isn't that strong. There is a relationship between engagement and quality of life. So we talk about what the psychological factors are here and what's happening. Lower activation itself is related to more frequent mental distress. So it's not exactly what I intended to find. When we look at the rest of the data, engagement is related to other things like depression, social support, those kinds of things, and we have to sort of figure out and tease out what we're measuring here because it's strongly related to coping and those sorts of issues, but not utilization. So what we know is that activation levels are quite high. They're related to health-related quality of life, but not so much to utilization of health services. So what are we measuring is ultimately the question. This is one of our nurses and one of our participants who was coming in from work. She wanted to have her picture taken so bad. We had a fantastic time with the women, and I'm super happy to have her photo there. And not only did she provide enthusiastic consent, but she likes to know whenever people saw her picture. There's all sorts of limitations to this work. So one of the big ones that we always talk about is like when you've seen one community corrections or jail or prison, you've seen one community corrections or prison. And then the other addition to that is you've seen it on that particular day because these things change on a daily basis. The new administration, everything goes out the door. We talk about generalizability in this area. It's very difficult. As I said, we have an extremely high literacy rate, which is a different thing. We have an extremely high rate of people who have insurance coverage. Different thing. So we have to talk about tailoring services. These are also women who are accessing services at some level because they are in community corrections. There's a lot of ways to maximize activation and engagement in this particular population, and it's a dynamic issue that sort of changes over time. It's very important to say that women coming out have some optimism, they're motivated, they've been engaged, they may be taking medication they haven't taken for a long time. I'm a strong believer in maximizing this. This is not to say that incarceration is in any way good for people or helps move things forward. We don't have any evidence to suggest that. We do have some evidence to suggest that there is time for it. And that we have to recognize this final idea that we want to educate people a lot. So we really assume people are really early on in the engagement level. We want to tell them what to do a lot. We want to tell them. And the truth is that people get this, especially, you know, women who are 40 years old understand what they need to do. And just like the rest of us, have no idea how to maintain those behaviors. We just, you know, none of us do. No, you know, when was the last time somebody took antibiotics 4 times a day, 6 hours apart? I mean, people don't do what they're supposed to do, even in the most dire circumstances. And so less attention, focusing on the need to act, and more on the how to act. That's the end. The first part of our, again, going back to my initial conversation, so the first part of our intervention, the women pick what's going to be the cover image for their notebook binder as they work through the engagement, and these are some of the images picked by the women when they're asked, what does healthy look like to you? These are some of the images that they picked, and it really speaks to the issues around common goals in health engagement. Thanks very much.